We're discussing traumatic brain injuries and the impact they can have on our lives and our loved ones today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm John Munson, in for Larry the rest of this week. My guest today is Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi, who joins us from North Carolina. He's the author, one of the authors of the book, The Traumatized Brain, A Family Guide to Understanding Mood, Memory, and Behavior After Brain Injury. He is also a the director of the Neuropsychiatric Clinic at Carolina Partners in Mental Health Care, a neuropsychiatrist at Preston Robert Tisch Brain Tumor Center at Duke Medicine, clinical associate in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Duke Medicine, and also a... I mentioned the book already. Okay, I've got a whole laundry list here. Dr. Vaishnavi, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So we just heard a segment on Point just a few moments ago, just before the news, about a rather startling admission by the National Football League that from one of their officials that there was indeed a connection between playing football and CTE, which is one form of brain injury. I just want to, just at the top of the show here, I'd just like to get your comments on what we heard a few moments ago.
Sure. I think this is actually quite remarkable, and but it is actually something that makes a lot of sense, that there is a connection between repetitive brain injuries, even mild brain injuries, and the development of a pathological process in the brain like CTE. So, I mean, there's definitely correlational data now, and there's enough information out there, I think, that the NFL perhaps is finally taking this seriously.
Well, certainly the NFL's lawyers aren't too happy, as we'll no doubt hear later on in the day as further reports come in. We don't want to spend too much of our time focusing on this. I want to throw this out to our listeners so you can join in here with your questions and comments. How has traumatic brain injury affected your life and that of a loved one? What questions do you have about traumatic brain injuries? You can join the conversation by calling us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also post on our Facebook page. Look for the Larry Mueller Show on Facebook, or you can tweet at us. We are at L Mueller Show. So, Dr. Vaishnavi, we heard about something called CTE in the story about the NFL. We're talking about traumatic brain injury. Give us an idea of what the differences are between those two things and why it's important.
Sure. So let me start by talking about brain injury. Brain injury is kind of an overarching term. So there are many types of brain injury. Traumatic brain injury is one type of brain injury. So a traumatic brain injury is where the head is hit directly or indirectly, and there is some alteration in awareness, even if it's momentary. So that's really important to keep in mind. It's not just that you walk by the door and you accidentally hit your head by the door, but nothing happened. That wouldn't be a true traumatic brain injury. A true traumatic brain injury, there has to be some alteration in awareness. So in other words, you feel dazed, even if it's for a second. And that would be the milder version. Of course, there are more severe brain injuries as well, traumatic brain injuries. So that's just kind of giving you an overview. Now, in terms of CTE, CTE is a term from pathology, neuropathology. It stands for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. It basically is where one can look at the brain and see changes in the brain. There's certain proteins that are excessively accumulated, particularly tau protein in the brain, and that we think that accumulation of protein leads to changes in behavior and in mood and in memory and in attention and can lead to a kind of dementia even in some cases. So that's what CTE is, and we think that CTE is a consequence of multiple mild traumatic brain injuries. So it's not just one or two. It's probably many, many mild traumatic brain injuries that accumulate over time. And in the context of the NFL, of course, this is related to potentially related to tackling. So repetitive brain injuries after tackling over many years may lead in some cases to this neuropathological problem, which we call CTE.
Okay, so let's focus on traumatic brain injury. How common is this?
It's actually very common. There are literally, depending on the study you look at, anywhere from 2.5 to 3 million such injuries a year that occur. And that's probably an underestimate because about 70% of traumatic brain injuries are actually mild TBIs. And a lot of those are probably underreported or not reported. So it's probably a lot more than that. And I think that in the past, people just tended not to think much of it. I mean, they might not have thought of it as being that significant. But as we now know, with all of this information coming out about CTE and football, these things are serious potentially. So you don't want to ignore even a mild traumatic brain injury, especially if you've got a lot of them.
And we're also, this has also been in the news a lot more in recent years because of the number of these types of brain injuries in that we're seeing now in soldiers returning from various parts of the world. They've been in combat. They've been exposed to explosions and all sorts of things. We're seeing that more often now. There's certainly a lot more discussion of the brain and the injuries to it than we've seen before. It's probably a good thing that we're having all these conversations, isn't it?
Yes, I think it's actually a very good thing. I think that it's better to know the risks and to know what can happen when brain injuries occur and therefore be on top of it and actually help treat some of these symptoms. I mean, the important thing to understand is that mood and behavioral and memory issues, the kinds of things that we focus on in the traumatized brain, I mean, those are actually the more common symptoms that we see after traumatic brain injury in terms of long-standing symptoms. And these are symptoms that can be very much treated. I mean, there are medications and other treatments for this. So it's important to be assessed for traumatic brain injury, and it's important to then get treatment for the injury. You mentioned about soldiers. I just wanted to make a point about that. We made lots of progress in terms of saving soldiers in the battlefront, in the battlefield. And part of that is related to having better armor, better body armor. Unfortunately, the improvement in body armor has actually had this consequence that the blast forces may go away from the body, away from the torso, and actually go towards the head. So in an indirect way, I think that's actually exacerbated the issue in terms of brain injuries in the military. But, the good thing is that the military is well aware of all of these things, and I think in general, as a society, we're becoming much more aware of brain injury and its consequences.
Well, let's talk about the types of damage from a traumatic brain injury, just to kind of give us an idea of what we're talking about.
Sure. So there could be various types of things that can occur. So, for example, there can be penetrating brain injury. So that's when something actually penetrates the skull and the brain itself. So this could be, let's say, a bullet that's fired into the head. So that will go into the brain. Any kind of penetrating brain injury is going to be a serious brain injury, at least a moderate to maybe a severe traumatic brain injury. And they have consequences. Obviously, there are life and death consequences that can occur. But even after that, people can develop seizures related to the brain injury, and all kinds of behavioral problems can occur as time goes on, as the initial recovery occurs. So people's personalities may be changed, their ability to control their impulses may be damaged, their ability to say the right things at the right time may be impaired. So all kinds of things like that can occur. And so that's one kind of brain injury. There can be a blunt force trauma type of traumatic brain injury. Someone is hit on the head, or there's a car accident and the head hits a windshield. So that can also be very serious, but it may not necessarily lead to the level of severity as a penetrating brain injury. There are other things that can happen. There can be bleeding in the brain. There are different types of bleeds, subdural hematomas, subarachnoid hemorrhages, all kinds of different variants, and all of those, of course, can be rather significant. And then there can be mild traumatic brain injuries, what we have been talking about a little bit, where you may not actually have any overt damage that you can see on MRIs or anything like that, but yet the brain has been shaken, the brain has been dazed, and that itself can lead to symptoms and consequences.
Well, let's take some phone calls. We have a lot of people who want to ask questions about this. This is a very important topic. So let's start in Fort Atkinson. And Richard, you'll be first. Richard, good morning.
Oh, well, hi. Thank you. Well, you know, the NFL has officially admitted awareness of chronic traumatic encephalopathy. and it's failure to do anything, big deal. Frontline broadcasts on public television have reported extensively on the problems within the NFL and in youth football. The movie Concussion is now in the theaters. The New York Times publishes articles on this subject. There is no reason at all to believe that the public is unaware of these problems. But what is the problem? Nobody admits that the problem is a brain traveling. When a head hits a barrier, the brain slaps up against the inside of the skull. Local physicians who know and care for our young know these facts, but they do not offer any leadership in our communities. They leave youth football, college football, everything like that untouched. Are we totally corrupt?
Richard, thanks for your call. Dr. Vaishnavi?
Well, I mean, I think this is a societal question, a societal issue. What are the risks that we're willing to take, and what is our threshold in terms of saying, well, this is safe or this is really not safe? It's true. I mean, we know. I mean, people in the field and others certainly know that it's not a good thing. Just intuitively, it's not a good thing if your brain is being hit against your skull. The issue here is that the brain moves within the skull. The skull doesn't move as much. The skull has all these bony areas or bony prominences. And so if there's a violent tackle, for example, or if there's a car accident or something like that, well, the brain can move against the skull, and it can actually be damaged by those bony ridges in the skull. So that obviously is one type of a brain injury that one can have. So the point here is that, yes, there are risks involved in all of these things. I have my own biases as far as whether it's worthwhile for people to have to kind of go with the risks in terms of professional football and even youth football the way we are. I think that it's more important to be safe than to be sorry in this kind of a situation. But, I mean, this is a societal question. I think it'll take some time for this to kind of be decided as a society. There's always going to be some risk in anything we do. And sports has benefit, too. I mean, you know, we don't want our youth to be obese and have all the consequent problems that go along with that and stop sports and stop football necessarily entirely. We don't necessarily want to do that, but at the same time, we have to protect the young brain, the developing brain, and I think we could have all kinds of problems down the road, decades from now, when these young brains perhaps don't develop as they should. So these are big questions, and I think it'll take time to settle this and answer them.
And thanks for that call. We've got some more callers waiting. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back and get to as many calls as we can. We have Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi with us. He is the director of neuropsychiatric clinic at Carolina Partners in Mental Health Care and a neuropsychiatrist at Preston Robert Tisch Brain Tumor Center at Duke Medicine. And we're talking, well, it is this month, the month of March, is a month when we are supposed to be being more aware of brain injury. It's Brain Injury Awareness Month, so that's why we've had Dr. Vaishnavi back with us on the Larry Mueller Show. We'll be back to take some more of your questions in just a moment. This is the Larry Mueller Show. John Munson in for Larry this week. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In this segment of the Larry Mueller Show, we're talking about traumatic brain injuries. It is National Brain Injury Month during the month of March, and my guest is Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi, who's the director of neuropsychiatric clinic at the Carolina Partners in Mental Health Care, and he is also the co-author of The Traumatized Brain, A Family Guide to Understanding Mood, Memory, and Behavior After a Brain Injury. We have full phone lines, Dr. Vaishnavi, so let's go right back to the phones. David is with us in Holcomb. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I guess my question is, I'm a retired staff sergeant out of the U.S. Army, and that was a 12B. I dealt with explosives my whole career. And then on my second tour, I was route clearance, and I took 6 direct IED hits to my vehicle, plus probably a multiple, 30, 40 that I blew up within, 15 to 50 feet away from my vehicle. And it's kind of a reoccurring issue with a lot of us. We have a lot of, like what you mentioned, behavior health issues. depressions, things of that nature. But a lot of it's undiagnosed because the VA tells us that we don't have TBI. I guess my main question is, what would your, I guess, to get help or, like, refer somebody, I guess, in my situation to get the proper care?
Right. I think that... So it depends on how exactly you look at it. I think it could be possible that the military is looking at TBI in a very sort of concrete way that, you know, if there's a direct hit to your head, well, that's a TBI, that's a traumatic brain injury. Well, it is, but we also know that IEDs and things like that, there are pressure changes in the atmosphere, in the air, and those pressure changes can also impact the brain. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a direct hit to the brain. It could be an indirect hit to the brain, which can also cause mood and behavioral and memory and other such problems like that. So I do think that if you feel like you're having these kinds of symptoms and it could very well be correlated to what you've experienced, I think it is worthwhile to be referred to, maybe it's in your case, maybe even out of the VA system, just go to a private doctor, someone who specializes in brain injury, where they can actually take a closer look at this. These kinds of symptoms are very much treatable, which is a good thing. And so I'd hate for you to miss out on the treatment just because of this reason. I think it's worthwhile seeing a private doctor.
David, thank you for your service and for your phone call. Let's go to Shelley next, who's calling us from Michigan. Shelley, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for taking my call. My father suffered a severe brain trauma in his little park in his hometown, South Carolina. And I was there when he was when he suffered from it. He's had 9 staples in his head when the trauma occurred. And but I just heard the caller before. My youngest son served 15 years in the Army, and he committed suicide after a severe trauma in Iraq.
So you've, Shelley, you've had a lot of experience with TBIs, and they haven't been good. Dr. Vaishnavi, suicide, other mental problems, you mentioned depression as being one of the consequences of a traumatic brain injury. Talk about that a little bit more, please.
Yes, I'm sorry to hear about your son. Suicide is one of those things that that certainly can be a consequence of brain injury. Ultimately, we have to keep in mind that the way we deal with the world, our moods, our thinking process, ultimately it's all housed in the brain. And so if there's damage to certain circuits in the brain that regulate our mood, that can lead to behavior like this. If we have damage to circuits in the brain that affect how we control our impulses, that can lead to suicidality as well. And so, you know, we have to keep that in mind, and it's important not to blame people for ending up having done something like this after a brain injury, because, you know, it could very well be related to the damage to these circuits in the brain that really control our behaviors. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge point that I want to make. And in fact, in the book, in The Traumatized Brain, we talk a lot about the neural circuitry of the brain. What are the different circuits that are involved in controlling our behaviors and our moods and our attention and memory and stuff like that? Because I think that it's not always intuitive. I mean, most people don't necessarily know this, or they may know this theoretically, but they don't really understand the practical implications. So the practical implications are, you know, your brain is precious. Your brain is key. You have to protect your brain. If there's damage to your brain, that can actually cause you to behave in ways that you normally would not have. Mm-hmm. And so suicidal type of actions definitely can occur after brain injury. We know that even this is a more severe case, but even with the NFL, we talked about earlier, with football players that have committed suicide and who've had chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and there might be a correlation between those two things. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important to address to know this and to address the mood problems that can occur after brain injury.
Well, and we hear a lot about football because it's in the news. Hockey, the NHL is dealing with this. But the way you describe this, this is really as simple as physics. I mean, the laws of motion, and it could happen at any time. You could be bicycling and suffer a traumatic brain injury. You could be, rock climbing. You could be out for a hike and slip on something and fall and hit your head. Any time that your head comes to a sudden stop, your brain moves, and that's where the injury occurs. So these types of things could happen in our everyday lives.
Right. And that's what's scary about this, is that anyone can have a traumatic brain injury, and it can occur at any time. So it's important to take it seriously. It's important to treat it and to be aware of it. I mean, this is Brain Injury Awareness Month, as you said, and it's important to be aware that these kinds of things don't happen just to someone else. I mean, they can happen to any one of us, really, at any time.
Let's take another call here. We'll go to Oshkosh this time, where Jesse is on the phone. Jesse, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show.
Hi. I suffered a traumatic brain injury in August of 2012, and my recovery is going well, but people, like, they see me because I look the same, but what they don't understand is that, you know, I'm a completely different person in, like, the way I think and such. And I was also wondering what else I could do to continue, like, in my recovery to make bigger gains, because I know I'm past the acute phase, so any input would be helpful.
Jesse, thanks for sharing your story with us. Doctor, what are some of the advances in treatment of TBI that might be of some help to Jesse?
Well, there actually are a number of different things that one could do. I mean, of course, there's medicines, and the medicines are for symptomatic treatment. So, for example, if there are, she said that, you know, she's thinking differently, so perhaps she's having more attention problems or memory problems than she had previously. Well, there are medicines, stimulants, and other medicines one could use for those kinds of symptoms. So one can address it symptom-wise. If there are mood problems, of course, antidepressants. If there are behavioral changes, there are mood stabilizers and other medicines we could use. So there's all of that. And we kind of borrow that from other fields of medicine. There are not medicines right now that are really specific to traumatic brain injury, but there are some medicines that have been studied for traumatic brain injury with all these other kinds of symptoms like depression or anxiety, et cetera. So there's that. There's also cognitive rehabilitation, which I think is really beneficial for a lot of people. That's basically where there's repetitive practice of cognitive tasks. So if there are memory problems, there are computer programs and other such things where you can repetitively practice your memory. That can help you with your memory, with your focus, and other things like that one could do. There are also new treatments now which involve neuromodulation. That's basically where you can use magnetism, perhaps, something called TMS, transcranial magnetic stimulation. That's actually FDA approved for depression. There are studies ongoing right now for using it in a traumatic brain injury as well, particularly with depression associated with traumatic brain injury. So that's a whole different type of treatment. There are cognitive behavioral therapies, talk therapies that may be helpful, just kind of putting things in context and allowing you to kind of recover mentally or emotionally from the brain injury and moving forward with your life. And finally, there are complementary and alternative medicine treatments such as meditation and yoga, which I think can be really quite beneficial in my experience in people with brain injury. So I think there are a lot of things that one could do.
Jesse, thanks so much for your call, and good luck as you continue to improve. 800-642-1234, the number to call to join our program. It's National Brain Injury Awareness Month this month of March. We're talking about traumatic brain injuries. with Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi, and with you if you choose to join us. 800-642-1234. We only have Dr. Vaishnavi here until 11:45, so if you want to get in on the program, I would call right away. Let's take another call, this time from Fond du Lac, where Joan is ready to go. Joan, thanks for joining us. Joan, are you with us? I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Joan.
That's all right. Go ahead.
Last summer, my husband had a brain injury. He fell off his bike, and that resulted the next day where he had a stroke. So it was kind of the double whammy of brain injuries. And we've been dealing with the issues since then. But what I find is that finding experts that can combine both psychiatry and neurology, they just don't exist, or they're not aware of some of the new treatments and or medications. The complication of having a stroke, you know, also limits the type of medication that can be used, because not all medications are effective when part of the brain has been, you know, injured beyond any kind of repair. And I guess my question is, for the future, what do you see as, how do we get physicians aware of neuropsychiatry and treating brain injury, not just from one standpoint of medications or from psychiatry, I guess that would be a medication also, but understanding how the brain is actually working and the psychiatric impact with that, not only for the patient or the victim of the traumatic brain injury, but for the family and the survivors, because I'm telling you, it is not easy.
Joan, thank you for sharing your story with us. Doctor, this seems to be right where you live as a neuropsychiatrist.
Right. Well, yeah, no, I think this is a huge issue. You know, unfortunately, neurology and psychiatry just historically have kind of diverged over the last 100 years or so, and the training for neurologists and psychiatrists has really been quite different, but things are changing. That's the good news. And so there is actually an association called the American Neuropsychiatric Association, or ANPA, A-N-P-A, and so they're neurologists and psychiatrists who are part of this organization. They've been involved, along with other organizations, in developing a training program for physicians after they do their residency, a fellowship program, which is a common program between neurology and psychiatry. And that's actually the training that I did in what's called behavioral neurology and neuropsychiatry. So there are now new programs like this, fellowship programs that are there, and new ones that are starting up. And I'm hopeful about the future. I think that over time, people will understand more and more, physicians will understand more and more about this overlap between neurology and psychiatry. And traumatic brain injury is really kind of a classic example of that. I mean, when you have a brain injury, obviously there's a neurological aspect, but a lot of the times the outcomes are psychiatric outcomes, mood and memory, behavior issues.
Joan's got a problem right now. What would you suggest that she do? What resources are out there that she could access here in Wisconsin, for example, where can she get some of her questions answered?
Well, so one thing is that ANPA does, the American Neuropsychiatric Association, does have a list of doctors that are members. So that would be the first thing I would suggest, and it's possible that there are there in Wisconsin as well. The other thing is, one can also look at the American Academy of Neurology also has a listing of neurologists by interest areas, and so behavioral neurology would be another another way to go to look at that. But the other thing is the Brain Injury Association. So the Brain Injury Association of America has chapters in just about every state. I would presume also in Wisconsin, and they may have resources listed on their website about doctors.
Okay. Joan, thank you so much for sharing your story and for calling in today, and good luck with your situation. We had a caller, Jake from Wausau, who couldn't stay with us, but he had an excellent question. I wanted to bring this up. Jake works for a domestic violence center and wants to know what he should do to help people there who may have a TBI but haven't been diagnosed because they're afraid to report it.
Right. Well, that's a very good question, and it's probably true that a lot of TBIs are underreported in terms of domestic violence. I think the key thing is to really tease apart whether it was a true TBI or not. So as I mentioned earlier, even with a mild TBI, there's some dazing or confusion that occurs at that moment in time. So one could be hit, you know, and it's, you know, obviously no hitting is good, but one could be hit and yet not actually have a traumatic brain injury. So I think that would be the first step to sort of tease those apart. The second question is that if it's a mild traumatic brain injury where there was dazing or confusion, even, you know, just for a few seconds or something like that, we can minimize it, but if it's something which has been occurring over and over again in this domestic violence situation, then I think it is worthwhile to try to persuade that person that, hey, well, this is something that could lead to long-term consequences for you. Mm-hmm. You may not have to say, you know, exactly how it occurred, but I think one could say that it's worth getting that checked out. So for that kind of a situation, I would encourage the person, for their own health, for their own brain safety, to get it looked at. But I understand, of course, there's fear, there's shame, there are all of these other factors that could impede that.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. This time it'll be Corey in Black River Falls. Corey, hello.
Hello, I just got a quick question for you. Me and my brother, when we were younger, we were in a car accident, and at 7, my brother got the worst of it. He was in a coma for 3 months and had to be retrained on everything when he got out. And as of right now, I think he's 31, 32, and he seems to exhibit the same behaviors all the time, where he can hold down a job. He's high-functioning with his disability. He can hold a job down, but then, like, a month later, he just kind of loses interest in it. He'll come to church and he'll be you know, focused on that, plugging into that. A month later, he'll fade out to where, I mean, he'll engage in good behaviors, good things, but nothing really sticks. It's not consistent. He just keeps finding himself in trouble, and we got to keep reeling him out of bad situations. I guess, you know, as far as being a brother and, you know, for my mom, what can we do with him to, you know, try to keep him more consistent with things so he's not constantly brushing into trouble and where he can stay focused?
Corey, thanks for the call. Doctor?
Well, structure is really important for the brain, so especially after a brain injury like what he's suffered. You know, as an adult, of course, we have a lot more freedom than as a child. But the structure that, you know, we had as a child is oftentimes helpful to kind of convey that and do the same kind of thing as an adult to some degree. So what I'm saying is that, I mean, it's up to him, of course, but if it's possible to have his day structured, even if he's not working at the moment, I think that can help. That can help in terms of not just brain recovery, but also in terms of having the brain to have more resilience, essentially. In other words, to try to basically get the brain to get more out of what it has. So when you have a coma, when you 3 months coma, like you described here, I mean, this is a severe brain injury, and severe brain injuries oftentimes have long-term consequences. And it could very well be that this is really what we're dealing with here, is that there's apathy or lack of motivation. It could be that there's what's called executive dysfunction, which is inability to really plan well and organize well and monitor your own behavior. I mean, these are the kinds of things that I see a lot, actually, in my clinic after a severe brain injury. And perhaps that's what we're dealing with here. So structure is really important. Structure in the day. There are medicines also that specifically can help with these particular kinds of symptoms. And just being there for your brother, which it looks like you're already doing that, and not being judgmental, I think is also really important.
Let's take another call quickly from Shannon in Shawano. Shannon, hello and welcome to the Larry Mueller Program.
Hi there. My question is kind of twofold. My 17-year-old son was involved in a horrendous car accident where he was the only survivor. He was the driver, and he had two brain bleeds immediately. They life-flighted him to Theta Clark. Another one popped up a couple days later. He was in a coma, of course, in intensive care. And it affected the orbit in his eye. It rotated. He's healed up from that. It's been a year and a half now since the accident. But I guess my twofold question is, we talk about protecting the brain. He was the only one wearing the seatbelt. His airbags deployed. How does your brain get three brain bleeds when you're in a car accident? It was only a 50-mile-an-hour accident. How do you get brain bleeds? I guess we try to buy our children the safest cars available and, you know, protect them. And God knows, you know, we enforced, you will wear a seatbelt or you will lose your license. And he was wearing one. So I guess I don't understand that aspect of it, how that occurred when an airbag deployed. The second part is he's really struggling with barometric changes. He gets horrendous headaches when it lightning and thunders or the weather suddenly shifts. Is that normal?
Let's take the second part of that first, Doctor, since we're almost out of time.
Sure. It is something that can occur. I don't know if, I mean, it's not normal as such, but it can occur after a brain injury like this, especially depending on, exactly where the injury was, what parts of the brain were affected. It really is all about location in the brain. So if a certain circuits were affected, certain parts of the brain were affected, you absolutely can have these barometric sensitivities. So that's part one, yeah.
And the first part, how can this happen when you do everything right, seatbelt, airbag deployment? It still comes down to the basic physics of motion, right?
Right. We can minimize risks. I mean, we can try to make them as little as possible. We can't really eliminate risks. And the thing you have to keep in mind here is with a brain injury, there's so many variables, so many factors. So the speed is certainly one of the things of the accident, but also the angle at which he was at, with respect to where the impact was, his weight, perhaps, the momentum that he carried with him. I mean, all kinds of factors, some physics, some related to sensitivities that, his brain may have. All of these factors play a role in terms of what the outcomes are. And seatbelts and airbags, I mean, all of those are important, incredibly important, and probably life-saving for him. But we can't really eliminate that risk entirely.
And Dr. Vaishnavi, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm afraid we're out of time, but I really appreciate you coming on to talk to our listeners this morning.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Sandeep Vaishnavi is the director of neuropsychiatric of the neuropsychiatric clinic at Carolina Partners in Mental Health Care, and one of the co-authors of the book "The Traumatized Brain: A Family Guide to Understanding Mood, Memory, and Behavior." After a brain injury. Thanks to Brian Shasau for producing this segment, and also for handling on-air production, and also to Jill Nadeau, who helped out as well, and Dave Potratz, who did his usual great job of technical assistance for the Larry Mueller Show. I'm John Munson, in for Larry Mueller. More to come. Stick around. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.